Hello, good afternoon, everybody. I'm Dan Gibbons from City Club. I think I said hello to most of you. Welcome back to so many of you. We're excited to be having this conversation here today. Again, another day when there's just so much happening in the city and in the world. Always good to keep our thoughts with those who are a little less fortunate right now. Certainly hurricanes hitting islands that are close to us. A little windy here and we can handle that. There down there, there's a lot of serious problems that come with that weather. So let's keep them all in mind. And of course, everyone in our city that's in fear today. And also affected by gun violence and other forms of violence. There's a lot of things that we try to do and talk about here at City Club, and I think today's conversation is going to help move that ball forward even further to try to solve some of those bigger picture issues. So we appreciate that you're all here. We appreciate, of course, our sponsors that help allow us to share this platform. I know Danielle's probably going to help mention those sponsors, but I want to mention, of course, Dion's Chicago Dream, Goodwill Industries of Southeastern Wisconsin, and U of I, University of Illinois Chicago. Thank you to those sponsors. As I say, we have so many great things that we could highlight in this city. There are only 365 days a year. Some of those are weekends and. So we're kind of limited in what we're able to produce here at City Club. But what we do put on is a very select group of speakers and topics. And we take your ideas. So please keep those coming. And when Danielle Parker calls, we answer, as I'm sure you all do, too. We've learned that over time, that when Danielle calls, we answer. And we're so fortunate to have Danielle as a partner with us at City Club. She really embodies what we're doing here with this next generation of City Club, lifting up the next generation leaders, entrepreneurs, as we'll talk about today, diverse folks that are doing things in all sorts of different sectors and different mindsets, different points of view. Everybody's welcome here to share those views. With that, I'm going to turn it over to our friend. She's a civic leader. She's a great friend, City Club. She's an entrepreneur. When she gets behind a cause, you better get right there with her because it's the right cause, and it's about to just take off even further. So please join me in welcoming back to the City Club of Chicago the chief mover at Dion's Chicago Dream, Danielle Parker, our great friend. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan.
Of course.
Good afternoon, everyone. I am Danielle Parker. I'm the Chief Engagement Officer at Law and the Fam LLC, or Latif for short. I just want to thank Dan and the entire City Club and Maggiano teams for the partnership. And Dan, it took a little bit of my thunder, but that's okay, because I didn't expect anything less. Thank you to Dion's Chicago Dream, Goodwill of Greater Milwaukee and Chicago, as well as my alma mater, UIC, for sponsoring this event. It is my pleasure to introduce the one and only attorney, Sam Owens. Sam is the co-founder of Latif and our chief legal officer. His advocacy focuses on cultivating bankable and capital-ready pathways for underserved entrepreneurs. Under Sam's leadership, Latif has created award-winning startup enterprises through our firm's technical assistance program. Sam received his Bachelor's of Economics degree from the University of Chicago and his Juris Doctorate degree from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Without further ado, please welcome Sam Owens.
Good afternoon, everybody.
Good
afternoon. And I want to start off just by giving some acknowledgments, the first of which goes to our great CEO, Danielle Parker, without whose vision and execution this would not be possible. So I want everybody to join me in a round of applause for Ms. Danielle Parker. Next, I want to give some acknowledgments to everybody who is here in this room. We are all fellow economic development practitioners, all committed to the cause of revitalizing our communities and reinvesting in the people who drive that revitalization. So thank you to the people in attendance tonight. Thank you to the people who are joining us on the live stream. And thank you to everybody who will be watching this on demand later on. So. Just two more acknowledgments before I pass the mic to my colleague to get us into the activities. First, I want to give some acknowledgement to my colleague, Attorney Jason Lee Garcia. He is a fellow trooper in this cause whose passion for the work and whose passion for people continue to inspire me to this day. And I just want to give my thanks to you, Attorney Garcia, for everything that you do, and it is an honor to share this stage with you. And finally, I want to acknowledge the persons whose brilliance and drive is what has all of us here gathered to discuss economic theory, economic development, law practice, community building, and everything that should be good and right in this city and in this country. So without further ado, I would like to welcome the Attorney S.L. Owens to get us started with the activities.
Hey, y'all. Oh, my goodness. Now, I'm willing to be fact checked on this, but I'm almost certain that this is as flavorful and just downright Main Street as this room has been for real, for real. We got the real people out here on Main Street in here. Thank you very much. So lots of people know me in here, so I'm going to act like y'all all know me and say, let's do a quick little icebreaker at our tables. Let's take about 2 minutes to talk to each other at the table, and I want you guys to identify one person to figure out what your table's superpower is and share that with each other. But here's the thing. Don't use your title. Don't use your accolades. Let's just talk. Human to human. 2 minutes. Let's do it. All right. Everybody know their table superpower. Everybody got a captain to share it with the room. Danielle, you mind kicking us off at your table and popcorn in it? Oh, okay.
Hello.
Hello.
Jay, table one. Our superpower is creativity and innovation.
Yes, thank you. We're going to pop back over here to Ms. Teague's table.
Hello, everyone. I'm Trisha. Our superpower is uplifting humanity.
Ooh, all right. All right. Who wants to hop in next? Right here? Yes.
Taekwon Lawrence, ours is connection and building.
Yes. All right. I love it. Caroline?
So, this group of superhumans, we grow communities.
Yes. Awesome. All right.
Hi, I'm Nikki, and the superhuman. Our superpower is construction because we have all the right tools to build.
Oh, okay. All right. I love it. Well, everyone, I'm S.L. Owens, and I am up here with a dynamic group of superheroes, and our superpower is making very difficult things look easy while putting the battery in our community's back. That's us. So I appreciate you guys. I always like a nice little icebreaker to just kind of, because the world is crazy, and I just want to bring us in here for this moment to be present with each other for the next 30 minutes. I'm going to hand this mic back over to Sam, who's going to kick us off on our presentation of our economic development model over here at Latif. You got this? All right.
Hold on, Sam. Let me say this in case some of you really are new to Latif. Law and the Fam is an economic development law firm. We have statewide economic development projects focused on entrepreneurs in rural and rural adjacent and urban communities across the state. We will present some case studies today on some of that work in Cook County and Vermilion County. So stay tuned for that.
I'm usually a without the mic type of presenter, but how do I sound with the mic? Can everybody hear me well? Not overly loud, good? Okay. Welcome again, everybody. Truly appreciate you being here with us. One of the many things that I like to do before giving any sort of lunch and learn, presentation, engagements, invitations, et cetera, is just to make sure that we establish some sort of shared vocabulary, some common ground, some level setting around some of the language that you're going to see us using and hear us using throughout this presentation and integrate it into some of our models. And we've got maybe about four, I believe. Yeah, we've got four terms that I think would be good for us to just level set with, introduce, and agree upon some common meaning around before we kind of launch into the model, launch into the framework, launch into the case studies.
Pardon me, Sam. You all can find our presentation. Thank you. You all can find our presentation materials on the QR code at your table, so you can look along if you like to. If you're live streaming, you can go to lawinthefam.com under press releases. It's the first press release that you will see on our website. It'll take you to the presentation materials. Thank you.
And let me just give everybody a moment to access that before I resume. Everybody who is interested in accessing it, could you just kind of give me a thumbs up or a wave once you got it? All right, looking good. My phone off. Okay, let's get into it. Definition one, what is an entrepreneur? If you look to the common, maybe Investopedia-ish definition to it, you might see it regarded as someone who takes on an inordinate amount of risk to engage in some sort of venture. For Latif's purposes, for our economic modeling purposes, we're going to more narrowly tailor and define that to be specifically those types of micro, very small businesses that have 10 or fewer employees. And we also want to focus on the types of entrepreneurs who are launching their ventures, sustaining their ventures, and trying to grow their ventures while operating in a capital disadvantaged environment, coming from a capital disadvantaged background. So when we say entrepreneurs in this context, in this environment, we're not talking about everybody. We're specifically talking about the people who are, to say it the old school way, bootstrapping. Didn't come in necessarily with the silver spoon, but they're doing great work and they're bringing services and products to market that their neighborhood and community values and needs. Okay? Definition number two, economic blight. Again, if you look to the general definition, you might see maybe a handful of different indicators as to when different methodologies want to suggest that an environment or geography is experiencing economic blight. Again, for our purposes today and moving forward, we want to more narrowly tailor that to some specific aspects of what we focus on as far as interventions with our work here on this stage. One aspect of economic blight in particular that I want us to focus on is what could be called either chronic or generational. And what I mean is that if you are experiencing yourself, or if you work or live in a community where for generations the economic situation has been on the decline, that's the type of multi-generational blight that we're going to be discussing today. Also, we're going to talk about the confluence of that multi-generational aspect and there being some high poverty zones. I believe the case studies that we'll be introducing today, you're going to see poverty levels that are anywhere between 25 and 30% of the population, high poverty. When we discuss economic blight, I also want to discuss it not as it's a, as if it's a static state of being, but more so a cycle or continuum that goes from a neighborhood, a geography, a zip code, an area code, starting off as being thriving, bustling commercial activity, walkable neighborhoods, anything that you could imagine that would allow a population to feel like they have all their needs, all their leisure wants, right there at their fingertips, financially accessible. So that's how I would kind of categorize thriving, a thriving commercial environment. When we talk about a cycle of economic blight, I want to talk about what it means to be on the decline from that thriving state to something that starts to cross over into that state of economic blight. So that decline, when you when you're experiencing increased high poverty rates, where you're seeing a decrease in commercial activity and a decrease in other factors and indicators that we would consider to be either standard of living or quality of life. And again, we're talking about a cycle. So we don't want to just doom speak towards a desolate economic situation that is not recoverable. We believe with our efforts as a community, our efforts as practitioners, that we can transform and turn around individuals, families, and communities. So we're going to talk about what it means to pivot from the decline to recovering to getting back to thriving. And finally, shared definition, because everybody on this stage, I said I wasn't going to be humble this year, right?
No.
We're not just law practitioners. We're not just economic development practitioners. I promise you, you're dealing with some of the most brilliant people in those fields and in those intersections on this stage and in this audience and also viewing on demand and live stream. So when we talk about a concept known as legal deserts, we're going to start to discuss what happens on that economic blight cycle when you have geographies specifically defined by zip codes, where there's a net loss over some sort of cycle or period to where the aggregate amount of lawyers are declining in that particular environment. And what it means to also operate in an environment to where the demand for lawyers is not being met by the supply of lawyers. Now, to further kind of break down my interpretation analysis around demand, I'm not just talking about want. I'm not just talking about need. I'm talking about everybody who wants a lawyer having the resources to be able to secure those legal services. So when we discuss operating in a legal desert, we're talking about people who demand lawyers, and there's just not enough of a supply to meet that demand. And with that being said, now that we've established our shared language and definitions, I'd like to transition into our economic model for Latif.
All right. Go ahead.
All right.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Let's go. So if everybody wants to, who wants to access it digitally has that pulled up, I think now might be a great opportunity to reference it. And the Latif economic model is premised upon kind of your classical, foundational, graphical depiction of a supply and demand curve with some things jazzed up because that's what we do. We interpolate it. We meta-analyze it with some things like third-party econometric analyses, our own lived experience, being in the communities, providing services to members and entrepreneurs in the community. Kind of that aggregation of all those different factors led us to develop the Latif economic model. And the model is premised upon the presence and, in many ways, the absence of lawyers such that the demand in the community is not being met is correlated and sometimes causally related to transitioning from thriving to declining on that economic blight cycle. Mm-hmm.
So the Latif model is built upon an intention of actively helping that supply-demand curve get into equilibrium. So in many of the case studies and the zip codes that you'll hear us present and that you'll see our presence in, you have situations to where the demand for lawyers is significantly higher than the supply. Kind of stepping outside of some of the classical presentations of supply-demand curves, my postulation, again, being a practitioner, again, being somebody who also is a purchaser of legal services, because in the immortal words of Jay-Z, sometimes you got to have lawyers watching lawyers. But I digress. We want to be able to impact and create an equilibrium price such that the rates for lawyers, the cost of production for legal services is not artificially high. I came into this law game truly believing that those rates, particularly in the private market, particularly for business services, were outrageous and inaccessible to the broad spectrum of people who serve the people who I serve or who come from the communities that I come from. So one of our early intentions as a partnership and as a collaborative was to figure out ways that we could create an equilibrium price such that the demand met that supply curve. And our theory, again, founded upon classical economic principles, is that if you had a market price, quote unquote, that was artificially high, the only way to meet that supply-demand curve is if demand were artificially lower. So our theory and our economic model is based on, well, what happens when you start to introduce changes to those markets such that you can get the costs of legal services closer to what's accessible, and you start to reduce, if not eliminate, those margins, those plus-ups, those probably at sometimes unnecessary capitalistic grabs that begin to make services inaccessible. And based on our graphical modeling and analysis, also serve to perpetuate certain types of blight. So what happens when we apply our model on a micro level to providing services to entrepreneurs in communities that are somewhere on that blight cycle? And it's probably not controversial, especially based upon the classical economic framework, to suggest and to believe that if you can get that price closer to an equilibrium level, that the cost for legal services is going to go down, and it's going to help you meet that demand, increase the quantity, increase the supply of lawyers and legal services. So I hope that that should not be controversial to anybody who has any real-world experience and or theoretical experience in microeconomics. So what this allows us to do is make those services more easily accessible to entrepreneurs in our communities. It allows us to lower costs. And kind of a hidden effect of that is it also allows us to increase capacity for more legal service providers to enter that marketplace. Now, what might be a little bit more grounds for robust discussion and debate are some of the macroeconomic effects that we are projecting once you begin to introduce changes to the marketplace that we actually do. The macro interpretation about how that impacts the demand for other industries and the capacity for new service providers across those industries. Based on our third-party econometric analyses, it suggests to us that some of the macroeconomic impacts of meeting the demand, the local demand for lawyers, are these other quality of life indicators that continue to improve and continue to keep communities that might otherwise stay on that declining part of the economic life cycle, turning them back around to that recovering and thriving stage. So some of those industries and indicators are commercial real estate. Again, I'm talking about a causal relationship. I'm not just talking about a correlation. So when you meet the demand for lawyers locally, it tends to have a causal impact of not only lowering the commercial real estate prices, making them more accessible at a price point, it also allows for a higher demand, but a lower net demand, in that it increases the capacity for more suppliers to enter that marketplace. And to the extent that people are generally of the mindset of free market economics, that should be seen as a good thing. We're also seeing the same causal relationship when it comes to other real estate holdings and access issues. Residential real estate, ownership, and rental. So when you introduce more lawyers into the local market, meeting that demand, you not only make home ownership more price accessible and home rentership more accessible, you also create more opportunities and capacity for new entrepreneurs, new businesses, new ventures to enter that marketplace. Now, those macro impacts are not just applicable to commercial and residential real estate. We're also seeing the same effect in other quality of life areas: health, fitness, wellness, social services. So our framework essentially boils down to this. We, as a community of economic development practitioners, no matter where you fit on that spectrum, whether you're boots on the ground delivering legal services, whether you are part of the financing team that helps subsidize some services, if we just pull together, if we meet that local demand, we can demonstrate that we can have a causal impact on improving standard of living, quality of life on all of these communities that have otherwise been labeled as blighted.
Thank you, Sam. I want to leave room for questions, so I'm not going to go too fast, but I'm going to keep it going. So on our framework, we really see there being two key buckets to think about in terms of the how. Like, we got into a lot of the, you know, meat and potatoes in the background, but like, how do you introduce those legal services to make this happen? And what we're seeing from our casework is that it really requires two things. It requires some underwriting partners for legal services, because we're talking about capital disadvantaged businesses. So they need assistance with even getting appropriately priced legal services. And I think I'll bench pro bono for discussion if folks want to get into that in terms of what that could do to a market. And then we need to talk about a capital infusion. When we're talking about Main Street entrepreneurs, they need help with the idea of working on their business and not in their business. We're talking about people who have 10 or fewer employees. So if you're trying to tell the pastry chef to come to the back office with the lawyers and accountants, good luck. Good luck when they have a rising demand of different constraints and pressures and day-to-day trying to make a buck, trying to figure out how to pay themselves a salary, trying to figure out how to buy their materials in this market, trying to figure out how to replace the oven with tariffs and things like that. Like, it's just how. Okay. How is we have to think about the micro grants. So a huge part of how we work with our partners who are invested in our model is saying, you can't just give them legal. You also got to give us some micro grants. So these clients can say, I can finally have my dream team, and I can have the capacity to actually work on my revenue model, to actually talk to a big dog licensing attorney, I don't know, like myself, to figure out my merchandising plan, to figure out my trademarks, to figure out supply chain issues, distribution issues. They need time, and time is money. So if you're asking them to walk away from making those delicious cupcakes that we all love in the neighborhood, we also have to help them afford to do that. So those are the two main ways in which we're sort of affecting this model. case studies. Let's talk about where we're at. So right now we have some huge projects going on across the state, and I'm going to tell you that we have more in common in this Prairie State than we have differently across these zip codes in terms of when we're thinking about neighborhoods that are experiencing blight. All right. So Danville and South Shore Chicago have so much in common. They may not vote the same. They may not go to the same churches and worship places. But one thing they have in common is betting on Main Street. It's not controversial what we're doing. People are asking us, how are you guys still doing projects all across the state in this climate? And I'm like, because everyone loves entrepreneurs. This isn't a controversial topic that Main Street, we're the ones who stay and roll up our sleeves and take care of the communities that we live in. And what we're seeing in Danville and South Shore that is the same is this idea of when you take one superstar entrepreneur on Main Street and you give them a back office of lawyers, CPAs, accountants, people who work on these cases with us, and you infuse them with a micro grant, they build 20 other superstars. That's how we have Atricia Teague back here, who is down in Danville saying, I'm going to open up a co-working space and incubator. And then she brings in a SL Owens and a Latif Sam, and all of a sudden you got 20, 30, 40, 50. Now she served 900 entrepreneurs across the state of Illinois. That's how that goes. That's how it goes. You put a battery in the back of entrepreneurs in South Shore. South Shore is in the building here today. What happens when you put a battery in the back? They don't get left behind when the Obama Center comes. They stay. They got lawyers to negotiate that. All right. They don't leave. They stay. They having problems with those slumlords over there. Causal effect, huh? What happens when the lawyers show up and make sure that those landlords are doing right by the community? So these things are real practical things that we're seeing on the front lines, but we know how it goes. We had to go get big data so to make sure that the numbers pinned out, and they do. Over and over across different metrics, we're seeing when you do this type of work in these neighborhoods, you get the same type of results. Now, let's talk about a community that I'm going to pass over to my brother over here. And I'm hoping David Rojas in Little Village, another battery in the back, a Latif battery in his back, what, spanning out hundreds of youth entrepreneurs who are becoming six-figure entrepreneurs and artists in this state. Come on, David. Tell them how it works, David. But what happens when you have a thriving corridor like Little Village under siege right now? Thriving. They weren't on the decline. They weren't in recovery. They were already thriving. This is when you see institutional racism and you see all of the systemic isms you can think about taking a thriving corridor and making it look like South Shore is recovering from. What war does South Shore have? The war on drugs. What war does Little Village have now? When you have those systematic policies that then become generational, multi-generational poverty. So we have a hitter on stage with us who can maybe give us some insight, and then we can open it up for some questions.
Thank you all. So particularly want to talk to you about what's going on in Little Village. If you all are familiar, Little Village was the second strongest economic corridor, you know, in the city and the state, right? And these were all made up of activity from entrepreneurs that we defined them earlier here today. Over the last couple months, because of outside forces, this Operation Midway Blitz, this is now as a thriving, the most thriving neighborhood in Chicago outside of the Mag Mile. Now we're on the decline. And this has activated, so I'm part of the Hispanic Lawyer Association of Illinois of Illinois, and we have a rapid response team. And so now the attorneys are becoming active now, and we have to inject it, though, with economic development attorneys, you know, to try to minimize and mitigate this decline and this harm. And this is falling relatively quickly, you know, over here. This 2 months, you know, earlier this year, it was great, you know. I don't know if anybody went to the Mexican-American parades this year, you know, on 18th and then on 26th. On 18th, oh my gosh, it was dismal. There's nobody out. And you know, this is, you know, there's activity. You know, this is not only a celebration culturally, but there's a lot of economic activity, you know, around this time of the year. And yeah, you know, those things are being disappeared out of, you know, out of this fear. You know, this week, I mean, they've shut down different kind of events out of fear for Dia de Muertos. Even Halloween, the trick-or-treating now, you know, a lot of our people are staying inside, not going out. Today, part of our, you know, one of our partner communities, there's not only there's a need for food assistance now. And we know in a few days, a lot of people aren't going to be getting their benefits. I don't know if you've been, if anybody's tried to get a tamale on the north side, you know, but all the vendors are gone. You know, we have these other things trying to sustain it, like the street vendor assistance fund. I'm sure this week now, last night we're having conversations with a bunch of attorneys like, okay, are there going to be, how do we help support the businesses? And then, so one of the things that we're doing is injecting, we've identified different partner sites where we can have attorneys just sitting in the neighborhoods. And, you know, there is, you know, as we're building this, you know, these case studies and this data, but I'm here to let you know, over the past month and a half, it really has been the attorneys. There have been a bunch of, like, some of my colleagues in the HLI, like in Brighton Park when that woman was shot earlier in this month, from the federal agents, you know, the attorneys were on the front lines, you know, of these things over there. And these are the things that, you know, will instill. I mean, it's not only the, you know, the legal assistance and the technical assistance, but there is also, you know, now we're, you know, peacekeepers and we're, you know, I was born here, so I'm a citizen, you know, so I mean, if you see, this isn't my bling. This is, and I'm not a gym coach, you know, these, you know, like we got to walk around with these things to alert our people, you know, but it's, yeah, you know, where they, we're taking on a protective role as well, you know, but yeah, we need, you know, and that's because, and there are attorney, I have attorney colleagues who are undocumented as well, you know, who are in there doing as much as we can. Most of them are like virtually, you know, that we can. But, you know, there is never more seen on this decline. There is one of the first things that we're doing. We have to inject more attorneys into the spaces. And yeah, it's, and then hopefully we can, we'll see, because it's a start. You know, this is just the start, you know, but without it, you know, I'll tell a lot of the people are going to, like you see on 26th Street, you know, if everybody's familiar with 26th Street, you've been around. I mean, it's heavy populated. We have that big, you know, economic corridor, but there's high residents over there. A lot of youth, you know, a lot of children. And then, you know, Little Village has been getting better. But, you know, like with this economic blight, you know, or this decline, you know, we can kind of imagine and know where it's going to go. Yeah. So, I mean, it's, you know, it's real, you know, and it's right here in our face. And yeah, you know, Mr. Ross, I'm sure you can see it already, you know, how many shops are changing their hours, you know, or looking to, yeah, switch up, you know, they're taking on different ventures. And I don't know how people are, you know, going to be paying themselves, you know, and then as you see, you know, a lot of it, you know, then there's also the people will, you know, Latinos are, you know, as a population are the fifth largest GDP. In other words, U.S.-based Latinos, you know, so that's a lot of activity that's over here. But as you're going to see, like a lot of these people who are under attack are also, you know, also going to take the steps. It's not going to be activity over here anymore. You know, they're going, there's some instances who are self-deporting, you know what I mean? And as you all see everywhere, they're not, you know, it's the entrepreneurs, it's the workers, you know, it's the, yeah, it's, you know, hardworking people and aren't going to, you know, there's declines of people who are going to take advantage of different services, health services, yes, you know, aren't coming anymore. And yeah, you know, but it's rough, but, you know, there is community being built over there. And it is, you know, at least in this instance, there is an injection of attorneys who are over there. And then, yeah, it is us. You know, we've taken that mantle, not only informing about your, you know, their civil rights, but it is this, you know, economic defense that we're putting up for them, you know, because, you know, there's no reason, you know, that 26th Street should be on this decline, you know, and, but it's pretty wild out there, you know, and.
So, Danielle, I know we are at one, and so I just want to check in with y'all. Do you want me to take any questions, or do you want me to say, hey, holler at me on LinkedIn?
I have a microphone here.
I will mention, make sure this works. I do have a couple pre-submitted questions.
Sure.
I do have a microphone, though, and maybe if we want to start, if there's anyone in the audience that has a question. Otherwise, as you get warmed up, I can ask one of these. Okay, so I'll hand this if you would introduce yourself also.
Saquon Lawrence, Revolution Institute. We're looking to buy energy and manufacturing businesses and convert them to employee ownership on behalf of African-American and Latino populations. My question for you all, thank you for this, first of all, is have you taken a look at employee ownership as an entrepreneur or social entrepreneur activity? And if so, what's your view? J.P. Morgan Chase Global Philanthropies did an interesting report on employee ownership. UIC has done some interesting research. So just wanted to get your thoughts.
Yeah, I'll kick us off because, I mean, I really saw some very dope research in practitioners when I spent some time over at UIC Law School at their economic entrepreneurial clinic that they have over there, where they were really working with giving some frameworks for cooperative ownership. And so, and what I would say is anything that sort of levels the playing field for entrepreneurs, who I was having this conversation earlier today with our good folks from Goodwill, where we talked a lot about the misunderstandings or sometimes boxing in of workforce development and looking at workforce development through such a narrow lens, or looking at entrepreneurship through such a narrow lens, when really there's a lot of intersectionality. Entrepreneurship, let me just say it. Entrepreneurship is workforce development. I don't want to keep arguing about this, y'all, because we got other stuff to get to, okay? Our payroll is still happening with an entrepreneur. It is workforce development. So I think that is a very worthy model to look at for especially communities that are experiencing that sort of decline. Right. Because you can pull resources together. You can pull all the expertise together and pull all the ideas in the room, and also give people a shared sense of ownership and management of a venture. And I actually may have some interesting projects we may have on some food entrepreneurs who are looking at really doing more cooperative work in these food deserts across the communities in the state. Yeah.
I'll add, probably from the perspective of my former life as a civil rights attorney, mostly enforcing anti-discrimination protections in the workplace. And from that perspective, I can tell you that out of all my casework, including the cases that made it to the Wall Street Journal, including the cases that set local records for damages, when it comes to the quality of the work environment, I have yet to see so many issues and problems coming out of any other space. And I have not seen any of that as far as like the degree of allegations, the types of problems, the systemic workplace problems that I see in other environments. I have not seen that systemically or even as periodical in these more cooperative workspaces. So I can tell you that anecdotally, I see an improved quality of work space and work culture typically in cooperative environments.
Let me add one more thing from my private practice experience seeing this model, more so through cooperative purchasing in the franchising space. Gotta tell you, there's a whole lot of benefit from the money team in terms of what happens when people are group purchasing. And I think layering that in with that cooperative model could be game changing, especially if fellow co-ops are purchasing together. And now that I'm spending so much more time residentially down in central Illinois, I gotta say more intrastate commerce connectivity would really do us some good up here in Cook County from some of our downstate farmers. Like, man, can I get some better apples and some better, you know, situations up here? But just in terms of like, there's a lot of intrastate activity that can happen from that as well. Anybody else?
Art, would you introduce yourself, please?
Yeah, I have a question. It's a very interesting presentation. And my question leads to a specific example of an entrepreneur. Let me give you my hypothetical. Suppose I am an entrepreneur and I have developed with artificial intelligence some robotics systems, okay? And I need to import parts from different countries, from China and elsewhere. And then I need to register my company here in Illinois, set up the legal entity, work out what the taxes would be, okay? What type of taxes? Can you advise me as to what your legal assistance group can do for me?
Sure.
I'm a startup.
Yes.
A tech startup.
All right.
Let's say an AI tech startup. And that's what I'm asking is, you know, what you can do for me to nudge me along.
Yes.
On the right track.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
So that's all I'm asking.
Yes, okay. I like it. So I want to make sure, because I wasn't quite sure if I was saying intrapreneur or entrepreneur. But I'll answer first with if you, because it applies, everything I'm about to say applies to both except for this one thing. If you are a intrapreneur doing all this lovely tech work, then you absolutely need to talk to an employment lawyer about what resources you have been using to come up with these brilliant ideas, because that company that you work for right now might have a whole lot of interest in that. And that is just speaking from my business litigation former life. Lots of fighting there. Now, moving to this being a question from an entrepreneur who has got out of all of those non-compete agreements and has proven that they actually own this tech and they can be the rightful owner of the patent and all of that, we can talk about the three buckets that we focus on with entrepreneurs once we've given them some capital to focus on working on the business. We talk about getting business ready first, and that is a series of checkpoints that says, this is a legitimate business ready to do their thing in this state. So that means you're properly registered. You have at least one organizing document. If you have co-owners, go ahead, please hop in.
And then also potential benefits under the CHIPS Act.
Okay.
I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a tech.
Hold on.
Let me hop in.
Yeah, go ahead.
Because I think this is a great place to give a qualifier that most practitioners in this space need to. There's a reason why, as a tribe, we typically don't engage in hypotheticals.
Right.
We like to operate in facts and actual controversies, because inevitably when people ask us a hypothetical question, they're withholding some sort of key fact. Mm-hmm. That would be critical knowledge in terms of actually giving sound legal advice.
Absolutely.
So let me just go ahead and just set that tone.
I appreciate that, Sam. Man, I was going to kind of get to it.
Chief legal officer.
Yes, I was going to. Chief legal officer going to hop
Everybody's
in.
Like, wait, there's one more fact I didn't tell you.
Don't you let me do my thing. So no, we're not giving, we're not giving legal advice today, but we are telling you what we do, the framework of what we do. And in this hypothetical, I will engage it to the extent of saying, we help you get business ready, capital ready, and partner ready. If you come to our clinic or you work with any of our partners as an entrepreneur, we're going to make sure you have the right things to scale, the right revenue model for what you're trying to do in your life cycle. Well, let's start here, that you actually know what your revenue model is, and that you have all of the pieces that you need to sort of scale your operations to not just be an entrepreneur, but to be an economic development practitioner. That's what we're doing. We're turning all of our entrepreneurs over here into real players in the economic development industry. Now, you want to talk specific CHIPS Act, go to lawnafam.com, go to GetFly, fill out a clinic application, and I will give you some dope legal advice if you can make it through the conflicts check. All right.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, please, if you have any.
Just kind of book in and summarize what SL introduces, another part of our Latif service model and framework is to take entrepreneurs through three different stages. It sounds like the hypothetical that you presented presumes that a business has already gotten themselves business ready, which is what SL mentioned as far as the pre-checklist, the pre-steps that we recommend all businesses go through, specific to their industry, specific to their craft, to prepare them for sales and revenue. The next stage we'd like to take our entrepreneurs through from business ready is to capital ready. What does it mean to raise revenue? What does it mean to raise funds for whatever that next stage of growth is? And finally, we take our entrepreneurs through what we call the partner ready stage. So that could be anything from what does it mean to bring on more equity owners? What does it mean to have a public offering? What does it mean to start to outsource some of the functions and the work that you have to outside vendors? So that's just kind of the three stages that we take all of our entrepreneurs.
What does it mean to know what your intellectual property inventory is? How do you work with valuators to understand what life cycle you have so that you don't come talking to me about wanting to sell your business in 10 years? And I'm like, maybe you got an idea, but I don't see any assets over here. I just want to keep it real with you. So come up with a new retirement plan. All right.
Okay, we have literally 2 minutes. A quick question. A lot of the talk, especially here at City Club lately, we've been talking about so much negative backdrop, right, of what's going on locally, nationally, internationally. The only way out of this, it seems, and especially when we're talking about city budgets, and just is growth. And growth relies on business growth. You are all providing assistance to allow that to happen, to encourage that to happen. What's encouraging you? What are you seeing that we could leave here with some encouragement? Maybe are there young people that are excited as ever? Are they coming out of UIC? Are they coming out of all our great universities? Mm-hmm. What are you seeing that that's going to encourage continued growth, which is what I think will bring us around to the next generation?
Can I kick us off, Jason, because I'm thinking about David. If you want to see an example that makes your heart go on fire here in Chicago, that can make you say, like, I'll rest well tonight, go over and look at the Alliance 98, TA 98 for short, over in Little Village. They are pumping out youth entrepreneurs left and right who are owning their intellectual property, who are getting co-branding deals that I used to work on in private practice with multinational corporations who are owned by holding companies. These kids are doing it. 18 to 24, David. So go over there and get inspired by some positivity. If you want to see something downstate in Central Illinois, go see the Trepp School, go see Soar Space Business Center over in Vermilion County and see how you can't walk down the main street downtown there without an entrepreneur saying, I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for the Trepp School. And these people all look different from each other. And these people all live in different segregated parts of the county, but they got one thing in common, and that is the Trepp School. I'll give you those two to make you feel good at night.
That's pretty cool. Let me jump in over here. Sam gave me a beautiful shout out earlier, but it's Latif. You know, it's organizations like Latif, you know, that keep me inspired and that I know that we are going to do good. And out in, you know, locally in the streets, you know, nationally, internationally, there is also community being built across all of those lines that I like. Black, white, brown, all of us together getting down. You know, it's, oh my gosh, forget about it. There's nothing better to me than that. That keeps me sleeping good, you know?
Yeah, we're having fun.
Yeah, we're having a little fun.
We have a little fun.
Well, this has been great. And thank you for your efforts. Thank you for sharing them with us today. Hopefully this discussion here, and of course we all will have this video online. Please share it widely. It'll be up tomorrow. Because I think, you know, that many more people need to know. I have an hour in between meetings at like 3:00. I'm going to go to 26th Street because I haven't been in a number of months. And I think it's important for us to see what's going on the ground and support. I'll check out the Alliance, but support businesses there. And more than that, just get an understanding, connect with people, build this community. So let's all commit to doing, you know, those sorts of things as we do at City Club. We all do our part, and we appreciate all you doing your part. Come back often. Hopefully you come back and tell us some success, right, soon. I know you've already had some, but let's encourage more. And for all of you, we've got plenty of programs coming up. We have one tomorrow, in fact, Westside United, Advancing Health Equity in Chicago. So we talk about economics, we talk about entrepreneurship, we talk about health, we talk about, you know, anti-violence strategy, you name it. There's so much more to come. If you're not a member, please sign up and join us soon. Thanks so much. Have a great rest of your week, everybody. Happy Halloween week. Come back to City Club soon. Thanks.